This is Age of Treason Radio.
First thing I remember was asking Papa why, for there were many things I didn't know.
On the White Network. With your host, Dan Stoffel.
The title of this installment is Jewish Crypsis, Judar. This is probably the last installment of this long series on Jewish identity, and I'll try to wrap up my thoughts on it at the end. I want to pick up where I left off the last time, which was the observation, the realization, that Jews are parasites, that the nature of Jews is parasitical. Their crypsis, the name game, the nose jobs, the hiding behind religion, the half-Jews, this is all part of this parasitism, of their parasitic nature. It's part of what they do and how they do it. And a significant portion of what they do and how they do it is aimed at disguising what they're doing and how they do it. It's feeds itself in that way. They enable themselves to do what they do by investing the effort to make sure that they are able to do what they do. And part of that is in discouraging anyone else from doing what they do, or from even noticing what they do, from even discussing it. They want to, they use a variety of tactics, and one of them is to flat out illegalize it. But I'm not going to talk about the law tonight. I'm going to focus mainly on the games that they play, the psychological tricks that they use. But it is an important topic, this Judar, this Jadar, sometimes it's called, which is closer to what the word is meant to invoke, which is this idea of Jewish radar, the idea of determining whether someone is or isn't a Jew based on some sort of evidence that you see without asking them if they're a Jew or not. It's from the outside. And in the military, they have an acronym, IFF, which stands for Identification, Friend, or Foe. And it's critical to warfare, and it's two-sided. There's the need to the extent it's feasible, identify who your friends are, identify who your allies are, who's on your side, as well as to identify the enemy. And Judar is like that as well. Jews use it to identify their friends. And anyone who isn't a Jew needs to be aware of it and can use it as well to detect Jews. There was a comment recently on an article. This is a related topic by way of example that I can talk about some of these issues having to do with Judar. It's not directly related, but it's tangential and a good introduction. It was an article on Steve Saylor's blog. He titled it Nicholas Wade on Ashkenazi Ancestry. And it was about the recent genetic science and some sort of study that was done recently having to do with the ancestral genetic biological nature of Ashkenazi Jews, how interrelated that particular subset of Jews is. And one of the commenters in particular made this kind of astounding comment, and it, almost as if they were forgetting that the whole post was about the genetic basis of Jewishness. And their comment was the effect that it wasn't possible to detect who is or isn't a Jew based on their appearance. He said he was reacting to somebody else's statement that said you can often tell white Jews from other whites. And I've commented on this before and written about it before, that at sites like Steve Saylor's that are partially racialist, they distinguish between black and white, that very strong contrast. But when it comes to Jews, they pretend that Jews are just another kind of white people. And so that's what that person's comment was about there. But they were insisting, in fact, that you could tell Jews from whites. And this comment that that I thought was so curious, the response to it was, no, you can't. I've lived in New York my whole life, and I can't tell Jews from non-Jews, excepting the ones in religious garb, of course. And then quoting from the same – responding to the same commenter who claimed Alan Dershowitz, Woody Allen, Noam Chomsky, Trotsky, Kafka, Carole King, the guy in Social Network, a bunch of other people, Roman Polanski, Bob Dylan, Streisand, Bette Midler, Elena Kagan, Ruth Ginsburg, are recognizable as Jewish from a mile away, was the claim. And this guy quoted that and said, no, they're not. In fact, those people don't even look like one another. You know these people are Jewish, and so you assign them to a physical commonality which does not exist. The flip side of pattern recognition, and he writes that in quotes, is pattern imposition, and he writes that in quotes, where the mind tries to see a pattern which is not there. You're engaging in pattern imposition, not pattern recognition. This is interesting. This is, you know, somebody was arguing that there is such a thing as Judar, basically, without calling it Judar. And this commenter was incensed by the very idea, you know, insisted that he was very experienced with Jews, having lived in New York, and that it wasn't possible, and that not only was it not possible, but that the person who said that it was somehow broken, flawed in some way. Pattern recognition is real. It's something that the human mind actually is very well suited for. It has an intuitive ability to just do it without even even when you try to think about how it is that you recognize certain things, people's faces or whatever, and do it without even a conscious thought. When people try to think about how it's done, they still can't quite understand how it's done. It's just one of those things that the human mind is innately capable of. Some people are better at it than others, but all human beings to a certain extent have that ability. And that's not to say that, say, for instance, it's totally not understood how it works. And in fact, computers can be programmed to do pattern recognition. If you know anything about spam and spam detectors, they're based on statistics. They're based on examples of spam and being taught this is spam, this isn't spam. And after seeing a certain number of samples, a simple statistical calculation can make a pretty good judgment as to what's spam and what isn't when looking at email or websites or whatever. They're called discriminators, funnily enough. Those algorithms that are meant to classify objects into different categories, they discriminate. And they learn by example, as I said. And that's exactly how human beings do it, too. I mean, the ability itself is innate and unconscious in a lot of cases, but it can be honed, it can be sharpened, and in some cases it has to be taught how to recognize one thing and tell one thing from another. This idea of pattern imposition that this commenter suggests is the real problem here is, when I went to look it up, I mean, the first thing that occurred to me was he was talking about, you know, the human ability to look up in the clouds and see dragons and sailing ships and so forth, to see patterns. And that's part of our innate pattern recognition software in our heads, is that we're always looking for patterns. We're always detecting patterns. And in fact, there is, when I searched for the phrase pattern imposition, there is some discussion about it amongst autistic people. autistic kids in particular have this problem of seeing patterns where there isn't really anything to see. And I thought how typical that is of Jews is to pathologize their opponents, and in particular to psychopathologize, to say that the person is mentally ill, which isn't, it's just one of the examples of how Judar works is little bits of evidence here and there. I mean, sometimes there's something obvious, like the guy says, "I'm a Jew," and admits it openly. But, you know, in most cases, like in this case of this online commenter, is he a Jew or is he not a Jew? I don't know for sure. I can't tell. But one of the bits of evidence in favor of thinking that he's a Jew, supporting the hypothesis that, yes, maybe he's a Jew, is this attempt to psychopathologize the whole idea that Jews are detectable, that they have physical differences that you can tell. One of the things that they do once the denial that it's possible to detect Jews fails is they try to discourage it. You know, they ridicule you. And part of that ridicule that they're tapping into is they do it themselves when they talk about it pretty openly. And I found several examples of that. And you see them sort of joking about it. You know, it's a big joke to them that there is such a thing as Judar. A prominent example that I ran into was called Jadar, which is a website run by the Toronto Jewish Film Festival. And they explain in their about page that we Jews have a reputation for making great films. And that's what the Toronto Jewish Film Festival is all about. Great films, movies that engage, thrill, and make you laugh. Stories that are universal, no matter what your nationality or religion. So grab a friend and some popcorn and prepare to be entertained. After all, creating great films is what we do best. And they actually make a game out of it. The website is about, you know, showing you a bunch of films, pairs of films, and you have to click on which one you think is more Jewish. And they claim that how it works is that they look at the writer, the director, the producer, the editor, the cast of the film, and then they cross-reference that with a database that contains the names of pretty much every Jew in Hollywood, give or take a Jew. And then plus, it analyzes the movie for Jewish content, too. Jewish content? I thought these movies were universal, that these stories were about everybody and for everybody. But the reality is that there is Jewish content in movies, and especially in the morals of the story. It's a different subject, but and I won't get into it right now. But they make a big game out of it, and who knows how it really works behind the scenes. You know, they've computed their scores for it. It might even just be based on how people click, how people have clicked in the past. You know, the point about Judar, one of the points I'd like to make is that Jews actually, despite this facade of joking about it, Jews actually take their Jewishness pretty seriously. And why shouldn't everyone else? The disguise and deception that they engage in serves their interests, not ours. And that should be something that non-Jews always keep in mind, especially white people who seem most gullible and seem to fall for this this disguise business so most readily. In part, maybe even they're joking, the Jews joking about it, is laughing at us about it and about our gullibility. But they also joke about it because it's difficult for them. Their own crypsis makes it difficult for them to identify each other. And they joke about that aspect of it too. And they give each other tips as to how to overcome the problem. They encourage each other to try and play this game of Judar and overcome the problem of recognizing Jews. And another site I found was titled "How to Jew Activate Your Judar" at Schmooze Magazine. Growing up, whenever my father would take me to a place that was known for being particularly waspy, he would whisper in my ear, "Jew, Jew," in imitation of the Jew alarm our presence set off. While to my knowledge, Jew alarms do not actually exist, there are some more subtle ways of figuring out whether your friend's cute roommate is a member of the tribe. A couple of things about that. What they're doing there is they're in a paranoid way, imagining and projecting onto the wasps around them this hyper-consciousness about who is or isn't a Jew. It's actually Jews who are most often and most concerned about who is or isn't a Jew. And, you know, that's where the expression Judar comes from, is from Jews themselves using it. The article, after starting off with this kind of joking attitude, actually talks about some of the serious ways that if I were going to list out what the elements of Judar are, I would have listed the same ones. The first is physical appearance. You look at how somebody looks. And I talked about that several podcasts ago, the nose and so forth. The name and the name game came up. The fact that Jews have recognizable names and in some cases even change it. And so that makes it a little bit hard to use that with much confidence. They mentioned a couple I haven't talked about, hometown, that there are certain places that are known to be Jewish breeding grounds, places where Jews hang out amongst each other. Another is the camp connection, the fact that Jews send their kids off to Jewish summer camp and to Jewish schools to learn how to be a Jew, to learn what it means to be a Jew, to learn about things like Judar, to learn about the rituals and traditions and the language and the, you know, all the other elements of Jewish identity that are ideological rather than biological. Another that comes up that wasn't mentioned in the article, but I'll mention it because the article illustrates it, is language. Words like schmooze, expressions like member of the tribe, things like oy vey, expressions like that, that those are tip-offs as well, that somebody is Jewish. And that's one of the ways that they recognize each other, that they use those sort of things as signals to each other that go right over the heads of ignorant white people who don't realize that that's a Jewish thing or don't think anything of it when they hear it. It's like any other word that you don't know the definition of. You don't even hear it, really. And you may notice, I've noticed this, that I learn a new word and its definition, and suddenly I see it everywhere, which is, you know, it not so much a surprise because I now know it, but what it says is that, you know, before I knew what it was, my mind sort of tuned it out. And that's what white people tend to do with these things that would otherwise help their Judar. Another article, this one a little bit more sober, but also a mixture that starts out with some humor or with a humorous attitude. The Mystery of Judar from some San Francisco newspaper. And this is a non-Jew writing this. And he was talking about Gaydar because he had written several articles about Gaydar, which is a related topic, and how gays recognize each other. And his Jewish editor pointed out this thing, Judar, to him, said, "There's Judar, too. You should look into that. Of course, think about that." And he claimed that he had never heard of it before, that his wife is Jewish and his daughters are Jewish and his daughter's daughters are Jewish, and that he has lots of Jewish friends. Most of his friends are Jewish, but he'd never heard of this idea of Judar. And again, the most of the article is a big joke, making a big joke out of the whole thing. But at the end, he says, but to return to the serious theme from the beginning of this column, there's a larger, more compelling reason for the development of Judar. There was a time in Europe, and there still is a time in other places right now, when being able to know friend from foe was literally a matter of life and death. It was hard because Jews come from many different places on the globe and look many different ways, speak many different languages, and sorting it all out takes an almost supernatural instinct. Get it wrong, go to jail. It's like Monopoly, only with real people and the Gestapo. It is not known how much of a role Judar played in the survival of those who did survive. You know, this is, to me, this is the same old Jewish narrative about the Jewish history of suffering and oppression, and you know who were the oppressors? Europeans, white people. And this guy who claims he's white or Irish and married a Jewess, he's adopted the Jewish way of seeing not only Jewish history, but European history too. That he sees the distinction between the two, that they're different people, that the Jews were oppressed, the Europeans were the oppressors. And he's adapted that or adopted that way of thinking into his own brain. I noticed that the extremity, that it's either a joke or it's this deadly serious thing about the Gestapo and the Holocaust and being survival or not, as he says, it's all about surviving or not surviving. His excuse for it is interesting, though, and it's a common theme with Jews, that they take this stuff that they're doing that reflects their own bad faith, that they're up to no good, and it gets turned around into you're actually the bad guy. They're only doing it because you're so bad. And this is an example of it. This guy has absorbed this message and is regurgitating it now, writing newspaper columns, explaining this Judar thing that he's discovered and why he thinks it exists. It's all because, you know, of us evil white people. You know, rather than putting the blame where it belongs, which is on the people who are disguising themselves. The fact that there needs to be a Judar is because Jews disguise themselves. They hide who they are and what they are. A more sober example is provided by Kevin MacDonald in a sort of book that he wrote, or at least published these papers in a collection titled Understanding Jewish Influence. It was an article about where he refers to genetic similarity theory and how the basic idea is that when people are related to each other genetically, that they can sense that similarity to each other and act upon it. And he tells this, or he relates this anecdote from Robert Reich, who was the head of the Fed, he was the Clinton administration Secretary of Labor, and how he wrote about his first face-to-face meeting with the Fed chairman, Alan Greenspan. Quote, "We have never met before, but I instantly know him. One look, one phrase, and I knew where he grew up, how he grew up, where he got his drive and his sense of humor. He is New York. He is Jewish. He looks like my Uncle Louis. His voice is my Uncle Sam. I feel we've been together at countless weddings, bar mitzvahs, and funerals. I know his genetic structure. I'm certain that within the last 500 years, perhaps even more recently, we shared the same ancestor." And MacDonald's comments that Reich is almost certainly correct. He and Greenspan do indeed have a recent common ancestor, and that's where he ties in the genetic similarity theory. He also quotes Sigmund Freud saying, quote, "The attraction of Judaism and of Jews that he found, quote, the attraction of Judaism and of Jews so irresistible, many dark emotional powers all the mightier the less they let themselves be grasped in words, as well as the clear consciousness of inner identity, the secrecy of the same mental construction." There's the Crypsis and its purpose and its nature in a nutshell. From Sigmund Freud, the founder of the psychoanalysis and the root of so much of this psychopathologization that Jews engage in. He really formalized it. He probably didn't start it, but formalized it. Another really good recent article, in fact, it just was published this week over at Occidental Observer, Kevin MacDonald's online magazine, was titled Verbal Venom, Biological Parallels for Western Pathologies by Langdon Tobias. And the point of this article was that cultural Marxism, he described as parasitism, as evidence of parasitism, as a parasitic weapon, that language itself and ideas could be seen as a toxin, as a neurotoxin. He uses the word neuroparasitology, which he says is the study of how parasites manipulate the brains of their hosts. This is biology. This is biological science. It's an ongoing field with lots of new discoveries all the time that discover forms of parasitism in all forms of life, including mammals. And Tobias's point is that why not human beings? He writes, it's clear from biology that predation and parasitism evolve quickly and easily among animals. And he lists a bunch of examples of that. He says, so why can't predation and parasitism have evolved among those animals known as human beings? Why can't there be predatory or parasitic ideologies, professions, and even races? One answer might be this. There can't be, because that's a wicked thing to suggest. It's bigoted, hateful, and racist. And I thought that really encapsulates how the Jews do what they do. That not only are they a parasit, not only are they a people, and not only are they a parasitic people, but this is the mechanism of how they do it. All this talk about oppression and discrimination and hate and intolerance is them trying to tear down your defenses, trying to tear down and destroy your judar, your ability to discriminate yourself from other. The most basic thing that any biological organism needs to survive is the ability to tell itself from other beings. Within an individual human body, you have this immune system. And there's an analogy with larger human societies, that there are certain people who have a functioning judar, who have the ability to discriminate their people from other people and can see Jews for who they are and what they are. But within an individual person and within, to make a direct biological analogy here, is the word virulence comes up. I've mentioned this before, but when you look up what does the word virulence mean, and you hear it a lot with virulent antisemitism. The Jews like to use that word a lot. They like to imply that it's some sort of mind virus, this complaining about Jews or noticing Jews or resisting Jews is virulent. The reality is they're just inverting the truth and inverting reality. Virulence is, by definition, the degree of pathogenicity, the potential capacity of certain species of microbes to cause a disease within a group or a species, as indicated by case fatality rates or the ability of the organism to invade the tissues of the host. This is half Jews and assimilation and hiding, the crypsis. This enables Jews to invade and exploit a host. In fact, in an ecological context, the virulence can even be defined as the loss of fitness that the virus or the parasite imparts on the host. And that was a point that Tobias made in his paper as well. A couple of things I want to boil down here in this whole long series, some simple facts about Jewish identity and their crypsis. Jews exist. They exist as a people. It's in their minds, ideologically. They see themselves as a people, separate and apart from others. It's in their genes, biologically, through ancestral bonds. They disguise themselves in a variety of ways that we've talked about. They don't want to be detected, some of them, and in some cases. They want to pass, but they don't want to stop being Jews. They don't want their peoplehood known or its implications understood. Try as they might to deny or discourage it, they can, in fact, be detected. And when they are discovered, they screech. They blame you for noticing.